What is the one most important thing our society needs?
That would be harsher punishment for parole violators, Stan. And world peace.
Good morning and welcome into the Monday edition of The Daily Perspective. I'm Mark Congleton, driving the big crazy bus here. Your sometimes humble host. Glad to have you along this morning. Thanks for listening wherever or whenever you may be listening. I appreciate you being there and sharing the show with your friends. It is an interesting day in the neighborhood. Looking through the stories available over the weekend, trying to decide what to talk about today. It was not easy this weekend. It just wasn't, because our society is basically... It is consumed with entertainment, and people aren't paying attention to the real world. They don't know what's really going on. They're more focused on the movies that have premiered, and they're more focused on what some artist, some singer, some actor has had to say about politics than actually looking into politics for themselves and finding out what's really going on. So the two big stories, I think, that everybody was focused on over the weekend was the premiere of Avengers Endgame and the correspondence, the White House correspondence dinner, which Donald Trump, for the third year running, decided, no, I have better things to do. I think I'll go work. So those were the two biggies over the weekend. There are a handful more. There was a little bit of drama at the NRA members meeting. We'll hopefully touch on that a bit later. There were some more bombs and shootouts in Sri Lanka, and we'll look at that, hopefully. Kamala Harris, who's running for president, has decided on a couple of different topics to completely ignore the Constitution. Good for her. I mean, and what kills me about that is that so many people will say, well, she's right. She's right. And they'll buy into that ancient argument, that ancient lie that the Constitution is a living document. No, it is a legal document. It is written and stands as it is written, not as how you would like to interpret it today. And there's more stuff. More stuff. But let's start off with a couple of things that are on the lighter side. How about, since everybody was focused on the premiere of Avengers Endgame, did you know, you may know this or not, but I was surprised to find out that 4 out of every 5 movie tickets sold over the weekend, 4 out of 5, 80% of all movie tickets sold over the weekend were for Avengers Endgame. 80%. I don't know what those other 20% were watching, to be honest with you. But 80% of all movie tickets over the weekend were sold for Avengers Endgame. I'm full disclosure here. My wife and I, we've been enjoying the Marvel franchise. We've been enjoying the Marvel movies. We didn't see the last one in the theater. And all of our friends were just, I can't believe this happened. I'm so sad. And so we avoided a lot of social media for a little while. And then when it was finally accessible, we could get our hands on it and get a copy of it to watch, then we finally watched it, which is probably what we'll do with Avengers Endgame. I enjoy the movie theater experience. I like going to the theater. I like the popcorn. I like the whole thing. I'm not real fond of the other people that show up who have no manners and can't control their children, but I enjoy the movie theater experience. I have said before that I would pay extra to go to a movie theater that has a lower age limit, that you can't bring those kids in here because with their little flashy shoes running around and talking through the whole movie and you talking back to them, it's a bit distracting. I would go to a movie theater that will not allow you inside with your cell phone. Do you have your cell phone on you? I'm sorry, you'll have to go put that in the car. I would pay extra for that. Because it, without fail, during a movie, every single time I have been to the movies in the last several years, someone down front has decided that Twitter and texting is perfectly acceptable, even though they run this ad three or four times, notifications on the screen. Please be kind to others. Don't use your cell phone during the movie. That apparently applies to everybody else on the planet, but these gifted individuals who pull out their cell phones. I would pay extra to go see movies at a movie theater that bans cell phones. I would do it. So there I am. I'm that crusty old curmudgeon who hates children and modern technology. Not true. I hate rudeness. That's what I hate. I hate when people are rude. I would pay extra. But here's the thing. Avengers Endgame sold 80% of the movie tickets over the weekend. Domestically, here in the United States, $350 million this weekend. Worldwide, $1.2 billion. Almost 1.21. It was $1.209 billion. Wow. Just wow. It averaged over $75,000 per theater. Just amazing. Absolutely amazing. Just amazing. 4,662 theaters. It was the number one movie. And it may go on to be the highest grossing movie in history until this point. It's just amazing how the franchise has resonated with people. They've spent, were you aware it's been 10 years? It's been 10 years. They've been building this. This franchise has been under construction episode by episode for 10 years. And now they hit this point where they're all gathered together fighting a common enemy, and it's going to break records everywhere. It already has and may continue to. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is thanks to what? Thanks to what? It's thanks to our economic system. Yes, it is. It's thanks to the economy that the socialists say is evil. It's thanks to the economy that the people starring in this movie, many of them, say is evil. Yep, capitalism. Capitalism makes this possible. They don't like thinking about that. Well, people, speaking of being rude at the theater, people have no manners, and sometimes people are just idiots. And according to media reports coming out of China and Taiwan, as well as eyewitness accounts on social media, there's an unidentified guy in Hong Kong stood outside of a theater after he watched Avengers Endgame, shouting spoilers about the movie, telling people who had not gotten in to see the film yet what had happened, shouting them over the crowd. He got beaten up. People were not happy about that. They beat the guy up. In some of the original shares of the story, some Marvel fans online replied with support for the people who beat him up. Things like he got his just desserts served and it felt good seeing this. That's just an example of some of the things that were posted. Now, the filmmakers, the guys behind the movie, Joe and Anthony Russo, they have been on social media. They've made several appeals. Please don't spoil this movie for folks who haven't made it to the theater, because that's what happens. That's what happens. People go to see it, and then they share online what they think of things, and they're just so important they can't think about other people who haven't had a chance to see it. People who, you know, hey, I want to see how this plays. I understand. You're excited. You want to talk about this, but please shut up. So this guy is outside of the theater screaming at people, shouting at people, hey, so-and-so did this. Hey, so-and-so is it. He's spoiling the movie for people. And he gets a beatdown for it. Bless his heart. This is the world we live in. One, that people feel like they can do something like that. And two, that people would beat somebody up for doing it. Welcome to the world we live in today. That's just crazy. So we've had a blockbuster, literally a blockbuster movie. $350 million over the weekend, $1.2 billion worldwide. 80%, four out of every five tickets sold for the movies over the weekend were for this one movie. I need to dig in and find out what that fifth ticket was for. What else got any money? What else made any money at all over the weekend? That shouldn't be hard to find. Maybe during the break I can look that up. But dang, how would you like to be the people behind any other movie after this weekend? No thanks. Wow. Well, so we've had a big movie premiere, made a lot of money, idiots out there spoiling it for people, getting beat up, and that's the world we live in. Also in the world we live in, believe it or not, there is an app. There's an app for that. Remember that old pitch? There's an app for that. Believe it or not, there's an app. Believe it or not, for tracking your ex? No. There may be. For tracking your children? No. That's possible, yeah. There's probably an app for tracking your children. For tracking your pets? I would say there probably is. And you probably wouldn't be surprised to find out there was an app for any of those things, would you? Shake your head. I see. There's an app for tracking herpes. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, herpes. It's called Herp Alert. I swear with my hands up, I don't make these things up. I just pass them on. It's a tracking app called Herp Alert. And Herp Alert is reporting a massive herpes outbreak in California. I can't say that I'm surprised about that. They believe the outbreak is to be associated with the Coachella Music Festival. There you go. Local media reports that Herp Alert, which allows users of the app to self-report potential cases of the virus in return for access to doctors who can give them a full diagnosis and prescribe medications to deal with the virus's side effects, received at least 250 requests for herpes medication per day during the music festival. Most of the requests came from the area of the festival itself and surrounding towns where many festival goers were staying during the event. A spokesperson for the app has a spokesperson. File that one under what? An app spokesperson told a local CBS affiliate that the app typically receives no more than 12 cases per day from that same general area. Quote, in all, 1,105 herpes cases were reported in the Coachella Valley area and in the nearby cities of Los Angeles and San Diego. This is according to the New York Post. The number is a record for Herp Alert. Well, you know, shoot high. The next largest number of claims in Los Angeles occurred the day of and the day after the Academy Awards back in February. Even then, though, Herp Alert received a grand total of 60 inquiries. So here you have two big leftist liberal music and arts festivals, so to speak, and Herp Alert sees spikes during these. Herp Alert's patients fill out a series of questions about herpes symptoms for Herp Alert and provide a picture of a lesion or scar. Just when you thought it couldn't get any more weird. They take a picture. Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Click. Which appears on the areas affected, I will say. That's all I'm going to say. A physician then reviews the information, makes the diagnosis, and can prescribe medication within hours. So most of the cases reported to Herp Alert are breakouts of the virus. The interaction costs the users a flat fee of $79. Individuals came to the platform for a variety of reasons, including to get medication to treat and prevent flare-ups, in addition to those who came to see if they had a new case of cold sores or herpes, the spokesperson for Herp Alert. So you're telling your mother what your job is.
Honey, what are you doing now?
I'm a spokesperson.
Really? What for?
It's for an app online, an online app. You know what those things are with your smartphone?
Oh, I've seen those. What's the app, honey?
Herp Alert.
What?
Herp Alert.
I'm sorry, my hearing aid's acting up. What did you say?
It's an app that alerts, that helps you determine whether or not you have herpes.
What?
That'll create a little excitement around a Thanksgiving table, I think. Oh, gosh. So, there's your weekend, kids. A blockbuster movie and a blockbuster herpes outbreak. Oh, my. You are listening to The Daily Perspective. Hi there. Mark Congleton here. Oh, my goodness gracious. Life in the weird lane. That's how it is sometimes here. I hope you had a good weekend. I really do hope you had a good weekend. It was kind of a slow weekend around our place. They tend to be slow because we tend to work around the house and just chill out in our little neighborhood, in our little neck of the world. And what was my big accomplishment over the weekend? I had one big accomplishment I wanted to get done that didn't get done, and that was to decipher or determine, diagnose what's making this big rattling noise underneath my lawnmower. But things just didn't turn out that way. But I did make a bunch of I broke out the woodworking tools and created a bunch of traps for carpenter bees. And I know you're thinking, carpenter bees. If you have anything, like if you have a deck, if you have wooden structures that are not protected in certain ways around your home, then you see these bees. They look like bumblebees, and it's your first instinct is to bumblebee. Well, actually, no, it's probably not a bumblebee, especially if you see it buzzing around holes in the wood structures around your house, or you see it standing guard. That's something that these things do. They're very protective. They're very territorial. They're a lot like hummingbirds. Wow, I can't believe I'm talking about this. At any rate, you'll see one hovering around and chasing other bees off. Then you know you've got carpenter bees because that one is defending its nesting area and not allowing others into the area. And what they do is they bore little holes, just perfect round little, like 3/8-inch holes into the wood, and they lay eggs and then the little ones chew their way out, and they just destroy woodwork is what they do. And even worse is that woodpeckers, and we have these woodpeckers around our home, when woodpeckers find out you have carpenter bees, they come in and tear the wood up to get to the carpenter bee nest. And I've had to replace a lot of wood on our deck because of this. So I'm always looking for options. And one of the options is to get a can of WD-40 with that little hose, the little straw on it, and to find the bee hives, the bee nests, and to spray WD-40 up into them. And what happens is the WD-40 will kill the bee. And at that point, the struggle's over until next year with that one. But you have to go find all of them and spray into all of the holes. And if you keep an eye out and you watch for when they fly into them, then you can catch them right there in the act and get rid of them. The other option I found is the traps that I mentioned, and that's just look them up. Just Google carpenter bee trap, and you will find various plans for them. The simplest one is a piece of 4x4. You cut to 4 inches in length and drill some holes in, and then you attach a mason jar underneath it, and the bees go in the holes, find out there's really not a nest there, and then they see the light coming from underneath where the jar is, and they go towards the light. And because bees are dumb, they don't go back out the hole again. They just keep trying to go towards whatever light they see. And because the glass is clear, that's where they stay, because they're dumb. And eventually you get a bunch of bees and you're at least cutting down on the problem. But that was so whether it's wonderful or not, that was my weekend pretty much. Was doing that and hanging carpenter bee traps. So, yeah, I had a dull weekend. Bless my heart. And here we are back at Monday again. looking at the lunacy that is the world around us. Speaking of loony, Kamala Harris from California, she used to be a prosecutor, but it sure doesn't sound like she's been paying much attention to the Constitution with her plans for the future if she were to become president. She appears to suggest that she would use the executive authority of the president to help ban right-to-work laws. The laws that many states in America have enacted, which prevent unions from controlling how people are employed. It gives you the freedom to make your own choices about where you work, who you work for, how much you make, and the like, and prevents unions from charging you money. I don't know if you've noticed this, but whenever there is a strike, whenever there is a disagreement and the union steps in, who keeps working and keeps getting paid? That would be the people in the unions, or the union representatives, the union employees. Others are required to get out there on the picket lines and the like and work on behalf of the union, and they make a little bit of money, but the union people, they're still getting their paycheck. And that paycheck is coming from what they took from yours. Senator Kamala Harris indicated Saturday that she would use the bully pulpit to fight right-to-work laws, describing them as an attack on workers' rights. Just to clarify, it is the absolute opposite of the attack on workers' rights. It's actually workers' freedom. The barriers, she says, to organized labor, being able to organize and strike, are something we've grown, that have grown over a period of time. She said this at she was speaking at the National Forum on Wages and Working People. At the event, she emphasized the bully pulpit and executive authority to fight for workers' rights and specifically mentioned right-to-work laws. She said it has to be about, for example, banning right-to-work laws. Right-to-work laws allow workers to make their own decision to opt out of joining a union or paying fees. And the Supreme Court held it was unconstitutional to force them, finding in Janus versus AFSCME that mandatory public union fees violated the First Amendment. Executive orders are only supposed to clarify or provide further guidance on laws already in place. They can't overrule them or act contrary to them. So if she tried to exercise executive authority, is she saying she'd try to contravene the Supreme Court? Because that isn't going to fly. Senator Bernie Sanders said he would work to ban right-to-work laws, although he didn't talk about executive authority. But that's the danger Barack Obama started with the Dreamers and DACA, trying to go around laws and effectively legislate himself. President Donald Trump has supported right-to-work laws and freedom for workers. And that's one of the reasons he won, by the way, because people realize that the unions really, at one point in time in our history, the unions were necessary because the laws didn't cover certain things to protect workers, but the laws do now. Donald Trump said, "We've had great support from union workers, the people that work, the real workers, but I love the right to work. I like it better because it is lower. It's better for the people." And he's right. It is better from the people. This same person, by the way, Kamala Harris, has also stated that she would give Congress 100 days to come up with adequate gun control legislation, or she would do it by executive order. She is one of these 20 candidates. There's 21 of them now. They all believe that the Constitution is just a suggestion when applied to their side of things. Most of them all publicly have supported in one way or another socialism and believe it would be good for all of us. Well, except for them, because they wouldn't live like the rest of us do. And that's the thing about socialism. It's great for those who are in the ruling party. It's great for the socialist politicians. It's not so great for the people. But Kamala Harris, being among that crowd, is of course going to pander to leftism. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but these candidates all are leaning very, very hard left. Very hard left. It kind of remains to be seen what Joe the Liar Biden is going to do. But I suspect that if he wants to survive, he will also embrace the leftism these others have. He, I believe, is trying to come off as the old school, hey, I'm Barack Obama's buddy kind of guy. And he's trying to fly with that support. And I don't think it's going to work. Already, the Democrat Party is showing that it really doesn't want creepy Uncle Joe to be their candidate going up against Donald Trump in 2020. They are making it plain. They want someone younger because Biden is older. And they want somebody more radical. And Biden doesn't represent that. They want somebody who touches that chord with the younger leftist voter. At one point, that was Beto O'Rourke. Beto O'Rourke couldn't pull 40 people to a gathering over the weekend. He had something like 35 people there, something around that. And then there's Mayor Pete. Mayor Pete is the current person of interest. He's young. He's relatively attractive. He's a radical leftist. He hasn't said anything about it yet, but he is a loony radical leftist. And he's gay. So that's an important thing for these people. He is a member of a victim group. And they're all about intersectionality and victimhood. So they've had the first black president. He's a member of a victim group. They've run the first female presidential candidate, a member of another victim group. And I would not be surprised to see Mayor Pete go a long way because he's a member of yet another victim group. We'll have to see how that pans out. This is The Daily Perspective. Good morning. Good to have you along. Mark Congleton here. You're there. That's probably a good arrangement because I'm the one with the license to drive all this stuff. It is the Monday edition of the program. Thanks for joining on Facebook Live. Thanks for being there in the podcast. Thanks for subscribing to the Daily Perspective newsletter. It comes out every day after the show. It is a compilation of the notes, the links, and whatever that get used in the podcast each day, including material I won't have time to get to. And there will be some things I won't get to today. I'll be honest with you, today I have sort of a short list just because of what I explained to you earlier. I mean, I was looking through stories over the weekend, kind of keeping an eye on things. It's just, what is there to talk about? Because everybody's talking about this movie, Avengers Endgame, and they're talking about the correspondence dinner and not much else. So, it'll be kind of a short list today, but there are going to be things I won't get to just because of the constraints of time. So get signed up today. Go to markcongleton.com, fill out the form in the right column of the front page of the website, answer yes to the email that comes to you, and before long, you'll be getting the Daily Perspective newsletter. If you do it before this live edition of the podcast ends, you'll get it today. So there you have it. Get signed up today. Just scanning through social media during the break, and ran across one of these things that pops up on Facebook. Your memories. Facebook cares about my memories. And it says, Mark, we care about you and the memories that you share here. We thought you'd like to look back on this post from 4 years ago. Yeah, this was from the 29th of April, 2015. And I read it and I thought, wow, that doesn't change. It says, laws have to be backed up with resources and political will. This is a quote, by the way. And deep-seated cultural codes, religious beliefs, and structural biases have to be changed. Deep-seated cultural codes, religious beliefs, and structural biases have to be changed. It's a quote. Who said it? Was it Marx? Stalin? Mao? Mussolini? Hitler? No. It was Hillary Clinton. She said that in a speech in 2015. We've come to a place in our nation's existence where leftist politicians are threatened by your faith. This is because they know our knowledge of truth will keep us from being manipulated by them. They're afraid of us. So they're trying to marginalize us and create the impression that it is we who are out of touch with reality and potentially dangerous to a healthy society. So when they make speeches, they refer to our faith as being disconnected from what is normal, so that their followers will see us as an obstacle to progress. Truth never changes. It does not progress because it doesn't need to. Only deeply flawed ideologies evolve over time. That is just as true now as it was 4 years ago. Truth never changes. That's something that you have to keep in mind when you see politicians on the campaign trail moderating their positions on things. They're changing their views. They're telling people, we have to have that conversation. That's something Kamala Harris said the other day about Bernie Sanders' position that convicted felons in prison currently serving their time should have the right to vote. She said, I believe we should have this conversation. Really? So you believe that what we have accepted as the standard for our society, we should be able to reevaluate it and give people who have shot up churches and schools the right to vote? You believe that that change is progress? No. No, it's not progress. It's pandering. It is posing. It is pretending. It's shameless huckstering for votes. That's all it is. Most Americans crave standards. They crave the guardrails. They crave things to be set. And they're getting really, really tired of these people who are moving the goalposts constantly. When they don't win, they want to change the rules so they can win. People are tired of it. I know I am, and I know you are. And I know that the people who voted for Donald Trump are tired of it. And I think more people will vote in 2020 and indicate that they're tired of it. Because these people have no standards. All they have is ambitions. And chief among those ambitions is the desire to make their way into office so that they can become rulers over people. It's terrible. Terrible, terrible thing. We live in a society that is generating all kinds of bizarre things. And don't get this wrong. There are some people in our society, a tiny, 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 tiny handful of people in our society who are acting out in violence. They're doing terrible things. And these people like Kamala Harris and Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton and others are capitalizing on these isolated, horrible incidents in order to create an impression that something even more horrible is wrong in our country. You see, the common thread with all of these things is that things need to be changed because this is horrible, and it's what's horribly wrong with our country, and it has to be changed. As Joe Biden said, we have to fight for the soul of America because this is what's happening to our nation. Now, what's happening to our nation is that the press is glorifying sick, twisted people and giving other sick, twisted people the courage to step out and act out the way the other sick, twisted people did That's why things are happening, like the synagogue shooting that happened in California. The evil psychopaths who shot up the synagogues in Poway and Pittsburgh undoubtedly share a number of traits in common. So we've had two. We've had California and Pittsburgh, a couple of synagogue shootings. They undoubtedly share a number of traits in common, but prominent among them is unremitting hatred of who? Donald Trump. So these people are not Trump supporters, as leftists would have you believe. You see, that's one of the things they want you to believe, is that there is this new rise of white hatred towards anyone who is different, and that it is white people who are rising up against minorities, and that it is white people motivated by Donald Trump doing terrible things because Trump is an evil, evil person stirring up racist hatred. And nothing could be further from the truth. But leftist politicians, they deal in lies every day. And so when something like these synagogue shootings happen, it's just another opportunity for them to step up onto their soapboxes and to spread more lies. While these people may have, these shooters share a number of traits in common, but the prominent among them is an unremitting hatred of Donald Trump. The Poway shooter put it, how shall we say, in succinct terms, calling the president a, quote, Zionist, anti-white, traitorous, bleep sucker. His Pittsburgh doppelganger was almost as disgusting. Despicable as they are, these two creatures can't really be accused of Trump derangement syndrome because, unlike many in mainstream media, they're at least somewhat correct in their assessment. Trump is pro-Israel. Indeed, likely the most pro-Israel president since Truman, who defied his own State Department to recognize the Jewish state. Come to think of it, Trump probably defied his State Department too, or a good part of it, in actually moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem rather than just promising to do so, as other presidential candidates have, and then throwing recognition of the Golan Heights as part of Israel into the bargain. Both of these actions were, according to the experts, supposed to set the Middle East ablaze. Nothing of the sort happened. All this while Trump was absurdly accused of anti-Semitism by the heavy breathers in our media before and after his election. But back to the Poway Pittsburgh duo. What can we do about such people? And do they constitute a serious new movement on the right, or the anti-Trump right, whatever that is? The answer to the second question is simple: no. Groups like the Klan barely exist anymore, nor are they being founded in any significant way as we speak. People like this are pathetic copycats of each other, but not a lot more. The United States is not, at heart, an anti-Semitic country, nor is it a racist country, despite what Maxine Waters and the rest may want to drill into us at every opportunity. We're a nation of mostly pretty decent people. This is something I've said for quite some time. Remember, I have said that prior to 2008, prior to that election, here in the South, where I live, everybody, regardless of color or race or background, we pretty much all got along. We were kind to each other, spoke to each other at the supermarket, at work, at church, across the fence to our neighbors. Everybody got along. And then somebody started stirring things up. But still, in spite of that, we're a nation of mostly pretty decent people. There's some crazy lone wolves out there, though. And that's something you need to keep in mind, is that when the press and the politicians make something huge out of shootings like these synagogue shootings, as horrible and terrible as they may be, they're isolated incidents. They're the exception to the rule. And they are not really how our country is going. They happen because weirdos, sick, twisted people like that get undue attention from the press. And others seek to cash in on it because they're sick and twisted too. It is the Monday edition of the Daily Perspective. Oh, man. I'm having a lot of trouble getting back into the groove today. I really am. Oh, my goodness. And when I get through in the studio today, I've got some things I've got to get done around here. And then when I get through, I'm going to be, I don't know how long I'm going to be out on the run today. So, yikes. It's going to be a strange day in my neighborhood. Anyway, I was a couple of things here as we wrap things up today. I was just looking through social media, popped across a little story about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and a claim she's made that the upper middle class doesn't exist anymore in America. The deregulation of Wall Street and rising income inequality destroyed the upper middle class, she says. And it's not just her who believes the middle class is suffering. Her fellow socialist Bernie Sanders has made the same claim. Of course he has. Indeed, most politicians, including populists, have bought into the idea, but the truth is really, of course, the exact opposite. The poor, the lower middle class, and the middle class, those have all shrunk as a percentage of the U.S. population because they have become wealthier. The upper middle class and the wealthy are the fastest growing segments of the American population. Since 1979, the percent of households categorized as poor, that's households earning less than $30,000 a year, adjusted for inflation and family size, has fallen by 4.8 percentage points. The lower middle class, that's incomes between $30,000 and $50,000, has decreased in size by 6.8 percentage points. The middle class, that's incomes between $50,000 and $100,000, has also shrunk by 6.8 percentage points. The number of upper middle class families, that's 100,000 to 350,000, has grown by 16.5 percentage points, making it the fastest growing segment of the population. And the number of rich in America, that's incomes of over 350,000, have grown by 1.7%. That is precisely the opposite of Ocasio-Cortez's and socialist claims. The poor are getting richer. The lower middle class and the middle class are getting richer. So those classifications, those groups, are actually growing smaller as members of them move into the next brackets up. The poor in America are better off than everywhere else in the world. Dinesh D'Souza said something that caught my eye earlier today. He said, I want to move to the nation where the poor people are fat. That would be the United States of America. When you look at the United States, at America's poor, we have more obese poor people than any other nation on earth. And as I've said, when we hear people complaining about income inequality, they're ignoring the fact that our poor in America, the people making the lowest amount of money, those people, those categorized as making less than $30,000 a year adjusted for inflation and family size, $30,000 a year, they're better off than practically everywhere else on earth. And even though people are telling you more and more people are homeless every year, that is a tiny, tiny, tiny sliver of our population. And we take better care of them than most other countries do. So when you look at politicians talking about the state of finances or the economy and screeching about income inequality, remember that quite honestly, most of them are lying to you. They're just lying to you. And most of them are people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or Bernie Sanders or Kamala Harris or Nancy Pelosi or someone like that. And it makes you wonder, how on earth do these people keep getting back into office again if they continue to lie to us? Well, there's a reason they do. And it's a pretty simple reason. And it's related to something they screech about every election cycle. They talk about campaign finance reform. You've heard them talk about that. We need campaign finance reform. And they put it in the light of corporations, big businesses, donating to politicians. And, of course, that means conservative politicians, because big business realizes that leftist politicians are bad for business. They're bad for business. That's why the economy just went into lockdown when Barack Obama was elected. It happened everywhere. You've heard me talk about watching these YouTube videos. These people who do these travel and leisure videos. That's one of them that I watch. And the husband of that couple lost his job in construction. He was in construction and remodeling. And when Barack Obama was elected, business dried up. People stopped building houses and they stopped remodeling houses. Those businesses shriveled up. The guy he used to work for closed his business and just went to work by himself as a remodeling guy. And then all of his employees ended up looking for other jobs. And so this guy was out of work for a while until he found another job, which was not in construction or remodeling, which he kept for several years until he got on his own feet doing the YouTube stuff. And now he's making, by one estimate that I saw, he's making $130,000 or so a year just shooting videos every day. That's kind of sweet. But when leftists get in control, the economy stagnates. The economy suffers. Now, back to what I was talking about, the reason that these people like AOC and Kamala Harris and Nancy Pelosi and Bernie Sanders can get into office and stay into office is because in 1789, there was an amendment added to the Constitution of the United States of America. It was the 17th Amendment. Up until that time, the state legislatures, your state legislature, decided who would be going to Washington, D.C. to represent your state. The 17th Amendment changed that and made it a popular vote, so that the people of your state would vote on who would go to represent them. And on the surface, that seems like, well, that's good. That's, as the socialists like to say, that's democratic. That gives us a horse in the race, so to speak. We have some personal interest in it. We get to be involved in the process. And on the surface, that sounds good. But the problem with that is that when it was taken out of the hands of your state legislature, it meant that these people could campaign. And as a result of that campaigning, money would come from not only their home state, but other places. See, this is where I'm going with campaign finance reform. In Alabama, where I'm from, the Democrat, Doug Jones, is getting the vast majority of his money. I think the figure was like 90% of his campaign contributions are coming from LA and New York and other liberal strongholds, not from Alabama. So liberals, leftists, progressives from everywhere else in our country are contributing to the campaigns of leftist, liberal, progressive candidates in other states. And as a result, the people of their states, in my example, the people of Alabama, they are not really supporting the person running on the left. The person running on the left is being supported by leftist strongholds like New York and LA. And it's because of the 17th Amendment. The Senate of the United States shall be composed of two senators from each state elected by the people thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall have one vote. elected by the people thereof, not appointed by the legislature. So we vote, but the campaign that influences our vote is funded by people who don't believe what we believe, who see things completely differently than we do. And as a result, lots and lots and lots of campaign financing and money flowing from other states is influencing people to vote for people who don't represent our values. And that is how people like Bernie Sanders get elected and stay elected. That's how Nancy Pelosi gets elected and stays elected. And how idiots like AOC get there in the first place. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow on the next edition of the Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.